It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Happy New Year, Reds, and happy 3 points. Manchester United, the informed team of the country. Entertaining, consistent, and winning. It's brilliant. Welcome to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast in 2021 with Harry Robinson and Jack Tate. A hard-fought, close defensive clash that went United's way against Wolves, the most boring team in the league, is followed by a genuinely brilliant and entertaining end-to-end win against Aston Villa. Two teams who are fun to watch right now, producing one of the most compelling and high quality, actually, behind closed doors games of the coronavirus era. Jack, with that win, United went joint top. That means nothing come the end of the season, of course. But what is most telling is the confidence running through the club right now. Fans who are looking up the table to Liverpool rather than down to fourth and fifth. Players who pass crisply, make good runs, clip balls over the top, go hard into challenges, and a manager who looks younger, smiles, keeps expectations balanced, but has a spring in his step, without a doubt. There's a long way to go in the season, more than half a season to go. But for now, this is very good.
Yeah, and we should be enjoying this. You know, it's easy to get dragged into all of the caveats that do rightly come along with the position that we're in. But at the end of the day, this Manchester United team is in a position that no Man United team has been in since Sir Alex Ferguson retired. This is by far the closest we've ever been to being serious title challengers. And even if the season fizzles out, we should take heart from the fact that this is where we are at this point in the season. And not only did we produce two wins in the last week, but and especially against Villa, we played some seriously stunning football at times.
Yeah.
I mean, the first goal against Villa comes from some brilliant play from Pogba to beat the Villa midfield into Rashford, who releases Wan-Bissaka, puts in a great cross to Martial, making the exact kind of run we want him to make. And then, especially after Fernandes scores the penalty, for 10 or 15 minutes, we weren't only the dominant team, but we looked absolute dynamite going forward. I mean, some of the play that we had going forward, some of the interplay was unbelievable at times. It was Pogba, Martial, Rashford, Fernandes, and actually Luke Shaw at the heart of it. We probably should have got another goal or two. Pogba had one very good chance that came from some of that football. But these are really, really good signs for United that we're not just winning games. And obviously the Wolves win was a bit of a slugfest that wasn't the most entertaining game. But you watch us against Villa, and this isn't just a team to enjoy the results from. This is a team that you actively enjoy watching every week.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just a genuinely really good game of football. Really entertaining. And
it was brilliant.
As I said in the intro, just two fun teams at the moment. That's certainly not something we would have said about United until very recently. Aston Villa as well are a team who came back in Project Restart, looked a lot better, and then have just grown and grown as this season has gone on. And I really enjoy watching Villa, not just against United. Well, I didn't enjoy watching Villa against United because I was concerned by the threat provided by Cash, McGinn, Grealish particularly, who is just an absolute gem of a football player. Just a treat to watch.
It was similar to the game against Leeds, except a team in Villa who are better defensively, so it was a much closer game, but it was just as entertaining, just with fewer goals.
Yeah, it's that, and I think Villa, of all the teams to come to Old Trafford who deserve praise this season, Aston Villa are probably ahead of Leeds and ahead of everyone else. because although they didn't win, and I think we deserve to win, but nevertheless, Villa are a really entertaining team and who have some serious quality all throughout the side, and someone, a team that I choose to watch every week, whoever they're playing, because they are fun to watch. But you're right, United, some brilliant play. And that's the thing. It got to the end of the game and you sat back and took a breath after what was undoubtedly a tense final 5-10 minutes.
Once the heart rate had come
exactly,
down.
Exactly, yeah. And then I turned to my brother and said, that was a really good game and we're fun to watch. And you're right, it's the level of quality and confidence in that front six, particularly from Paul Pogba, who was outstanding, but also from Bruno Fernandes, who kept things a little simpler than he normally does because he had more quality around him. But I think it's in players like Fred and McTominay and Shaw, actually, where you can see the change that this last few weeks of wins has done to them. And they're attempting things that they wouldn't normally attempt, and it's often coming off. And when Dan James came on as well, actually, some lovely hold-up play and interchanges with Martial, and you just thought he wouldn't be trying that pass through the lines, through a crowd of defenders, only a few weeks ago.
Yeah, confidence is massive for so many of the players in our team. I think the ones you picked out there have been the perfect beneficiaries of a team that's actually in good form at the moment. I think Luke Shaw is the clearest example. Obviously, Alex Telles came in at the end of the transfer window. And to be fair, I think most of us, myself included, expected Alex Telles to probably end up being our starting left back by sort of halfway through the season. I thought we expected it would take him, you know, a little bit of time to settle, and then eventually would sort of usurp Shaw, mainly on account of the fact that he's a bit better going forward. But Shaw has stepped up his game massively, and he looks now like the talent that we thought we were getting all those years ago when he signed. You know, he's not a world-class left-back, but what he offers us going forward at the moment is massive. He's improved defensively as well recently. You know, this was a brilliant performance from him against Villa. It really was. Down the left, him working alongside, whether it was Rashford, Martial, Fernandes, Pogba, whichever one of those four was kind of down the left at any point in the game, some of the interplay was brilliant. And yeah, again, probably should have got an assist for the chance that Pogba missed in the second half. But I mean, I think he is the perfect example of, as you say, someone benefiting from being in a team that is flying high, that is high on confidence at the moment. And really, when you think about it, he's probably only ever played in a United team that's full of confidence, maybe once or twice in his United career, maybe at the start of Solskjaer's time as manager, and then maybe at the start of the season when we finished second under Mourinho. That's really it.
Yeah, it's true. And it was both games. He came on against Wolves and I think helped to change the game massively. Telles was having a less than good game against Wolves, and his contribution was pretty minimal in a negative sense. And Shaw came on and
Telles has struggled to be in a fullback. He's done all right at fullback, but as a conventional left back, he's struggled so far.
Yeah, I'm very happy to be proved wrong. Well, not proved wrong, but I just haven't been convinced yet. And I think it's not only that in comparison to Telles, Shaw looks better. It is definitely that Shaw has improved off the back of the increased competition.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing that in all sorts of areas of his games. His crossing has certainly improved, but also the intensity and the with which he comes onto the pitch. And against Wolves, but also against Villa, there was this kind of intensity he got from left back in terms of his pressing, the way he went into aerial battles, and then some good crossing and play as well, that just seemed unfamiliar, and that's a real relief. But there are plenty of other players to focus on, and we'll talk about where that result's left United and Solskjaer's tactics. But just to pick out a few others, Paul Pogba in that form is just a joy to watch. One of his very best United displays, I think, and had it all. And if this is him earning himself a move elsewhere, then fine. I love it.
Yeah, this was a brilliant Paul Pogba performance. It wasn't just the quality, you know, the good passes, the vision, you know, like we mentioned for the Wan-Bissaka, releasing Wan-Bissaka down the right for Martial's goal. Was also the intensity from Paul Pogba, which actually, even in some of his best United performances, isn't always there. You know, you sort of see him in some games where we're playing a deep block and he's able to be a little bit slower and more calculated with what he does. And he has the quality to do that. But I think what was so lovely about his performance against Villa was just that intensity. Everything he did was very, very fast. It was at full speed. Even in defence, he was very, very good at pressing the Villa midfield. It was a joy to watch. And this is the Paul Pogba we wanted. And again, like you said, when we have Pogba and Fernandes in the lineup, it takes some of that creative pressure off of Fernandes. And I think it does make him play a little bit simpler as well, which I think we benefit from. You know, yeah. I wasn't a vintage Fernandes performance by any means against Villa, but I think you saw that we were able to maintain attacks for a longer period of time because he was keeping it a bit more simple. He wasn't just looking to play that match-winning pass every time he picked up the ball. And I think that does, honestly, part of it, at the least, comes down to having another creative force like Pogba in the team.
Yeah.
I think also credit to Solskjaer, because I think Pogba was playing in what I think is his best position as well, in that more advanced midfield role, not as a number 10, but certainly not in that sort of double pivot in a 4-2-3-1 alongside Fred or McTominay or Matic. I think pushed up a little bit further forward is definitely his best position. I mean, I think he had the most touches in the opposition box that he's ever had in a United shirt. And that just goes to show, you know, what difference it made having him start that little bit further forward. Because in attack is where he's a more potent force than in defence, and we should be trying to maximise that as much as we can.
Yeah, I was gutted when he missed that chance, because it was a fantastic chance and brilliant from Shaw. And we'll actually talk about Wan-Bissaka in a second as well, the other fullback. But Pogba, it was so refreshing to see. He proved that in that kind of left, almost left wing position, or perhaps left midfield is a better way of describing it, but in that left midfield position, he showed some actual discipline. And protected his fullback and helped Shaw out, and was his positioning was good, his intensity in the tackle was good, except on one occasion, and you just it was a kind of complete performance. And I think it was not asking him to do everything; it was asking him to protect Shaw when he could, and to create chances for United. And that was kind of it. There wasn't the need to dictate the tempo, which is what is required of him in that kind of double pivot in the base of midfield. And that kind of let him do what he does best, which is play with some freedom and play like a street footballer who is just blessed in the most amazing way physically, who has he's the perfect specimen for a midfielder, with those long ranging legs, the driving runs, the brilliant technical ability, which I guess isn't a physical blessing, but a technical ability and the strength and the aerial presence as well. And he had everything. And I think that Pogba playing like that, and it is well known that most of the United players look up to him, Pogba playing like that, it just has an immense impact on the team. But United's first goal from Wan-Bissaka and Martial,
I think just to finish the conversation on Pogba, I think the other benefit of having him playing a bit further forward is that when he picks up the ball, and even against Villa, Pogba will lose the ball occasionally during a game, just on account of the style of player that he is. He invites pressure from other players, and often he can beat them, but he will also lose the ball. But the other benefit of him playing in sort of more advanced left side of midfield rather than at the base of a midfield is he's picking up the ball 10, 15 yards inside Villa's half rather than, you know, our side of the centre circle, between our own penalty area and the centre circle. And that means if he does lose the ball, it's not fatal. It's not going to end up with us conceding a goal. We've seen it before when he's playing deeper, he still invites that pressure. But if he loses it, suddenly they have a goal scoring opportunity. That isn't the case when he's playing more advanced, because we have time to recover. We have more players in reserve a bit further back to stop the attack. And, you know, you could make the argument that maybe just Pogba needs to simplify his game and not lose the ball as much, but that's what he brings to the team. He invites that pressure, and quite often he beats it, which then allows us to spring an attack. But playing further forward, you give him more of a license to still play like that without the massive risk of losing it and immediately the other team being through on goal.
And there've been a couple of these with Pogba, and I don't want to predict a consistent end to the season for him, because every time we've kind of thought that that's coming, it hasn't. But over the course of a couple of months, as he's been coming back from, as he's been recovering from coronavirus, as he and Solskjaer has both said, but there was that 45 minutes against Leipzig at home where he was just unplayable and played with a real intensity, and then it stopped in the second half against Everton in the first half. I think he was again outstanding, and then it kind of faded out, and against Villa it was for the whole game. And I think there are some signs that this is a I mean, you just have to hope that this is kind of a sustained or sustainable run of form for him.
There was another game too. I don't know if it was Southampton or West Ham away, maybe, where he was brought on at half time when we were losing away at half time, and he changed the game then as well. Yeah,
well, he certainly did it against PSG as well. He came on and affected the game massively, and more recently as well, I think against Leicester actually on Boxing Day, he came on and changed the game in our favour. I will talk about I was going to mention Wan-Bissaka and Martial and their combination for the goal, but Solskjaer, as you said, put Pogba in the right position, in that left midfield position. I think he could, and he did appear in on the right of midfield as well at times. He could be an option there going forward as well, because obviously United have kind of a weakness in the right side of attack. And Rashford was playing there on Friday night, but Pogba could play there in the future. But credit to Solskjaer over both games against the two Midlands opposition, Wolves and Aston Villa, got his tactics spot on. And the Wolves game was not entertaining, but I don't think you can be entertaining against Wolves. I hate playing Wolves because they're a team with a huge amount of talent, and unlike Villa and unlike Leeds, just no intention to entertain, and just incredibly boring and a horrible team to play against. And it brings them a relative level of success, I guess. But it wasn't an entertaining game, but Solskjaer got the tactics right and it paid off eventually. And I think we deserve to win that game. I don't think there was much doubt about that. And against Villa, completely different tactics. Went with a diamond. Pogba on the left had a massive influence. And the midfield worked as well, even though McTominay had a kind of a pretty poor game. And when the game was getting away from us, when Villa were getting back into it, he brought Nemanja Matic on and changed that game as well. And he brought Shaw on against Wolves to change the game on for Tellez as well. So a huge credit to him, because he is behind both of those victories.
Yeah, Solskjaer deserves all the credit in the world for the way he's handled this last week. I thought his team selections were pretty much spot on. Like you said, changed the game with some of his substitutions. Yeah, the Wolves game was pretty awful at times. I absolutely despise playing Wolves. I mean, it's just the worst fixture you could imagine, because it doesn't have the spice or the real fury of a derby game, but you also just know that it's going to be cagey and just a pretty awful spectacle. But I think what this week has shown as well, probably more than anything in my mind, it's just a perfect example of how fine the margins are in elite level football. No, we could, if we're being honest with ourselves, we could quite easily be coming out of these two games with 1-2 or maybe even no points if a few things had gone differently. You know, Wolves had some good chances, especially in the first half, and we obviously got some luck at the end with the deflection, although I do agree that I think overall we were the better team. You know, Villa had some brilliant chances and could easily have snatched a point or more, you know, with either the last kick of the game with Baye's outstanding block, or even before that, you know, Mings had a chance, Watkins had a chance, De Gea made a few good saves, Matty Cash had an effort from long range. You know, there were multiple chances that Villa could have scored to either equalise or even win that game. But those are the margins that we're dealing with. And you have to give credit to this United team for finding a way. You know, we always say that that is the hallmark of champions. And well, it's definitely not where this United team is at the moment. We definitely aren't champions in waiting. And I still don't think that we are serious title challengers. These are really positive signs nonetheless that we are able to grind out and see out results. It's not perfect at all. And we've seen these fine margins go the opposite way for a team in Spurs, is that you just really just have to look at them for a cautionary tale and how this
absolutely
can go
completely
wrong in the other direction. They were, top or just breathing down Liverpool's necks 3 weeks ago, and now they're down in seventh or eighth and in a bit of freefall.
Yeah.
But, you know, these are positive signs that this is a United team that's learning, that is maturing. And we've talked a lot about the mentality that the United team is sort of fostering. It's been mentioned by Solskjaer, it's been mentioned by Bruno Fernandes. And I think you can see it on the pitch. We didn't see the game out perfectly at all.
No.
And Solskjaer mentioned it after the game, that this team needs to improve. And it does need to improve, because this has been a problem for over a year now. But, you know, we got some luck and we got there. And actually that, it can be a massive boost. And I just think mentally this team is is getting to a level we've not seen before. And you could see, I love the celebrations at the end with Bailly, you know, four, five, six players going up to him at the end of the game to specifically seek him out to congratulate him for that block at the end, which saved the game. So there's a togetherness in this squad. The mentality is improving. These are positive signs, even if we are at the moment benefiting from some very fine margins.
Yeah, exactly. And we've always been aware that we're operating on fine margins. It's something we said over the last few weeks. I think particularly starting from the Leeds game, we've benefited from those. But also the 3-2 win against Brighton, for example, was ridiculous. And to be honest, ridiculous slice of luck. Southampton benefited from fine margins. It went against us in the first half and then for us in the second half. That's absolutely clear. But as you say, togetherness in the squad, but
Sheffield,
also
Sheffield United as well.
Yeah, yeah. But also that it just, the last week has been handled so well. Everything around the club and as the media begins to talk about United mounting a title challenge and quite a large section of the fan base as well, and I'll talk about that in a second, but Solskjaer is handling that well and not, and he's always been good at setting expectations right. And after defeats, he comes out and talks about the positives of the game, and after wins, he comes out and talks about the things that need to be improved on, the negatives. And that just balances expectations and prevents us from swinging from emotion to emotion. And he was right. He came out after and said that we need to improve on seeing out games. And as you say, he's absolutely right. And we've seen evidence of that over the last 12, 18, 24 months where we've thrown points away. But as you say, these are games that we wouldn't have got 6 points out of. We probably would have got 2 points out of last season. And that's a massive improvement, even if it is fine margins. The challenge now is to continue the progress and make these games next season be ones where we get the third goal in the 70th minute and we comfortably see it out for a 3-1 or 4-1 victory. But the other point that you were talking about, Tottenham and United being second in the table now behind Liverpool on goal difference before they play on Monday, it's brilliant news and we'll milk it for everything we can. But it is important that it can all change so quickly. Spurs were title favourites almost alongside Liverpool only 3 weeks ago and the talk about Mourinho's return. And now it's United who have filled that position alongside Liverpool. But the speed at which things have changed in a great positive way for United is also the speed at which it could all fall apart again. And so while I am delighted with it at the moment, we have to be aware of that and judge and make our kind of reaction and our analysis not just on the results and the wins, but also on the performances and those fine margins.
Yeah, these fine margins are what you're always dealing with at the top end of the Premier League. You know, you go back and you could probably look at 8 or 9 out of our 13 Premier League titles and pick out a moment or two in every season that if one thing had sort of fallen differently, we wouldn't end up being champions. You could look at all the league titles that we've lost on goal difference or by 1 or 2 points that, you know, would also, you could look back on and say, oh, if this had gone differently. I remember there was one where we effectively lost the title to Chelsea one season around, I think probably 2009, maybe to 2010, maybe 2006, where Drogba scored an offside goal against us, for example, which effectively cost us the league. Like, things like this happen every season. It's nothing new. It's just that the league is so congested this season that one or two of those moments going a different way and suddenly you're back in, we're at Tottenham now, 7th, I think, 8th. So it can change incredibly quickly. I think that's why, you know, why we're not getting too ahead of ourselves. We're not getting too excited. It would have been really easy. And maybe if we recorded this immediately after the game last night, we would have been coming on here getting giddy about, oh, we're in a title race. You know, we're better than Liverpool. You know, we're coming for them. We're winning at Anfield, whatever. And it is really important, I think, to keep that positivity because it's not something we've had here in such a long time. We do also need to keep some perspective. We definitely aren't there yet and we are only halfway through the season. But at the same time, sometimes you create that luck a little bit on your own. You know, say with the penalty against Villa. Sure, I think we got a bit lucky. It is a penalty in my eyes, 100%. But you know, you get a little bit lucky in that you still get a penalty. It turns what was probably not a very good opportunity into an almost guaranteed goal. But you create that luck yourself by being in the right position, by playing front foot aggressive football. So I think it's one of those things where you kind of ride your luck and you take it where you can. But you're right that we need to learn, I think, as a team, not to have to rely on these moments.
But it is all part of the progress.
Yeah, exactly. But I think one aspect of it that you are seeing us do better in is that we haven't fallen behind in our last four games now.
Yeah.
Was it Leeds, Leicester, Wolves, Villa?
Yeah, yeah.
It hasn't been perfect, but not falling behind is actually a big deal for us at the moment. You know, that in itself, we said before that our...
That is a sign of progress. That is something that was going wrong in the last few weeks and has changed. And so immediately there's so much this season. I mean, just the progress from the start of the season is monumental anyway, but there are these individual things that you see have changed, and that is a real positive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there are probably two things that we really needed to improve. It was our ability to see out games when we're in a position, you know, where we're leading towards the end, and not falling behind and putting ourselves in these 1-0, 2-0 holes, because neither of those things are sustainable. And we mentioned that a few weeks ago, that, you know, it's great and all that we're winning these away games after falling behind, but we couldn't keep relying on that all season. Well, we seem to have fixed, at least recently, that issue. We're not falling behind as much. We're starting games much quicker. Now it's about improving the second part of that and not having to rely on, say, a bye last minute block. It's about Pogba finishing that chance. You know, we had a few other chances during the game that on another day might have gone our way. Martinez made some good saves, but we should be killing that game off quicker, then being able to rest some of our starters for the last 10 minutes. You know, those are the kind of things that we need to build up to really become a very, very good team. But at the same time, you got to just enjoy the fact that this is a United team very, very, very clearly going in the right direction. That is fun to watch, that puts a smile on your face, and that very clearly has a chance at, you know, having probably the most successful season we've had since Sir Alex Ferguson retired.
Yeah.
We're not going to win the league. I think we all kind of know that. Liverpool are still heavy, heavy, heavy favourites. But isn't it just nice to at least have an inkling that it's New Year's Day when we played Villa and we're joint on points with Liverpool? I mean, that's not anything we expected to come maybe in the next 2 years, let alone halfway through this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell you what it has done is that, even though I don't expect us to win the league, although the fact that we're anywhere in there just makes football more enjoyable. But we spoke in September and October as pretty consistent, as personally a big fan of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as a man and a manager from the moment he joined United as interim. And we said in October that we were afraid that the good work that he'd done would ultimately count for little for him personally, because the continuation of those poor results would lead to his sacking, and that United might have to pull the trigger if there were better options available elsewhere if those poor results continued. And since the 1-0 defeat to Arsenal in particular, but basically since the 6-1 against Spurs, everything since then has given him, not just until the end of the season, I think, but has given him the chance from the fans and from the board, I think, it's given him that platform on which he now deserves a prolonged chance to have a real crack at winning a league with United. And look, there's so many caveats to this season. The fact that teams are pressing less because they're more tired. The fact that the big teams are not doing so well. The fact that everyone's playing pretty poorly. The fact that Liverpool have had a huge amount of injuries. The fact, all of these things. But Solskjaer has given himself that platform on which he deserves a chance now. The final thing I'll say on Villa before we preview the City game, we can't continue without hailing King Eric Bailly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he's come in for Lindelof the last four games. This must be the first time he started four games in a row in a couple of years, I would think.
Yeah.
I think we've always known with Bailly that the talent is there. When he's played, you know, he's made a couple of mistakes here and there, but in general, when he's played and he's been fully fit, he's been very, very good. I think we've also all known that stylistically, he is probably a better partner for Harry Maguire than Lindelof is, and that I think they complement each other well. They both cover up for each other's weaknesses and both maximise each other's strengths. I think, but to be honest with you, I think most of the United fan base had pretty much given up on Baye as a serious option as centre back, so. Just because the injuries had got to a point where it was almost impossible to rely on him for anything. But I mean, his last few weeks he's been very, very solid, and I mean, the last minute block against Villa, I mean, he saved us 2 points at what, I mean, undoubtedly. And I actually watched it back just before we recorded this, because I wanted to go back and sort of see how the game panned out. And watching that Baye block, so he's quite static when the ball comes in, which is not the best. But when it drops to Keenan Davis, he's actually not that close to him. He makes up a good sort of 3 or 4 yards of ground in a split second to get there and throw his body on the line. I kind of assumed, without rewatching it, that he was just in front of him the whole time and just sort of got on the ground to block the shot. But the reactions, the instinct to come and make that block in the last second is unbelievable. The ground that he makes up to throw his body on the line, I mean, like I said, you can't say enough about him. He's been brilliant. And to be fair, if he can stay fit, I don't really see a reason to bring Lindelof back in, because I honestly think Baye has been better than Lindelof. Not that Lindelof had been playing badly recently. I think he'd actually been having a decent period. But to me, Maguire and Baye is a much better, a much more stylistically correct partnership than Maguire and Lindelof is.
Yeah, I agree. And just, four fantastic performances. And you're right, it was always injuries that was a problem, not his performances. He's another player in the team who is just fun to watch. And it was great to see him getting the praise after from the rest of his teammates. City, let's preview that quickly. The League Cup semi-final, one-legged. Does the one leg benefit us or City, do you think, rather than the traditional two legs for the EFL Cup semi-finals?
I mean, in general, I don't really think it benefits any team that much. I think both teams are pretty evenly matched. But I think the timing of it has ended up benefiting us, because obviously City have a few positive COVID cases at the moment. Was it Kyle Walker and Gabriel Jesus, I think, have tested positive.
It looks like Ederson might as well.
Right.
There was something coming out just in the last hour or so that Ederson might not be available for United.
So there you go. I think that, the timing of it, that it's only one leg, has ended up suiting us, because we have a very fit squad at the moment, thankfully, sort of touch wood, but City are dealing with some issues. I think it's a tough one, because I was seeing a lot, actually thinking about this on Twitter when the draw came out a couple of weeks ago, that in some ways you'd almost rather the game be at the Etihad, because we have such a good recent record there. I don't think we've lost at the Etihad since like 2015 or something, 2016 or something. It's been a while. But I think at this point, I mean, I almost don't want to say this, but I think we'd have to be favourites in this game at the moment. With the COVID cases affecting Man City, with how well we've been playing recently. I mean, City have been in decent form as well, to be fair. But I think you'd have to make us favourites going into this game, which is a position that actually scares me a little bit, to be honest. And I'm still scarred from the Bernardo Silva sort of masterclass at Old Trafford in at this stage of the League Cup last season. But I think we are favourites. But, the favourites tag is almost a curse in these fixtures, because, as I said, the away teams have had such a good recent record in the Manchester derby. You would expect it to be a more entertaining game than what we saw in the league. It can't really be any worse. But I'm excited actually to watch us play Man City, because I have faith in this team to put in a performance. Whether it's enough to win, I don't know, but I have faith in this team for probably the first time maybe ever with sort of this current sort of group of players, that in a big game we will actually come out and put in a good performance. Whether we win or not is another matter.
It's just a good test, isn't it?
I'm excited to watch us play.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how Solskjaer should set up, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the traditional anti-City setup of Dan James in there for pace running behind. And to be fair, if Ederson is injured, that does provide a different element to the game, because Ederson is one of those keepers who's so good at coming out and dealing with those balls over the top. You take him out of the equation, and perhaps you do think, let's get Dan James in there ready to run in behind and hopefully capitalise on a moment of weakness from City's defence or keeper. But the great thing at the moment is there are plenty of options for Solskjaer, and the fact that Cavani's missing is a shame. And we're actually going to go on to our bonus Q&A in a second, when we'll talk about Enes Cavani's suspension. And because it's New Year, and the start of a new year, we thought we'd give a treat to all of our listeners by adding the bonus Q&A on to the normal feed as well, not just the patron feed. So you can have a taster of what it's like to get the bonus Q&A at the end of all your shows. If you want to sign up to become a patron after hearing this and enjoying it, go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. And you can find information for how to do so for as little as, I think, 38 pence a week. So we will move on to those questions in a second. But it's difficult to make a prediction for the City game, particularly without knowing who they're going to have available. But as you say, as I say, it's a good test. And as you say, there is some faith. And it would be so good to get to a final, especially in this form.
Oh, it would be brilliant. And I think what a moment it would be for this team to break this sort of semi-final voodoo that we absolutely sort of have going on against City as well at home, obviously not with fans, which is the real shame, but at home against City, you know, get one over Pep. And also not only that, but in this specific sort of period where we are playing so well and we seem to have that belief in the squad. And I think this would really just be sort of icing on the cake that this team can go the whole way. It can sort of reach these finals. It can go one better than we did last season. I think it would be a massive boost to us. And then also, you know, going into a lot of these players, you would expect to probably have a weekend off against Watford. A lot of our star players will probably be rested, which would be big boost for them. I mean, it's a massive game. If I'm looking at what I think will happen, I reckon the first half will be quite cagey. We've seen this in a lot of the big games since games have been played behind closed doors. The adrenaline and the energy in the stadium sort of saps energy from the game. But I think in the second half, you'll see both teams take a lot more risks than they were willing to in the league game. I feel like I always predict draws at the end of these episodes to kind of cover my own back about not jinxing us. But I think I've got to be positive for once and go with a 2-1 United win.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, the Villa game, the final 35, 40 minutes at least, did feel, it had that cup final feel where it looked as if neither team wanted to see out the game and were just desperate to get the win rather than any kind of aspirations for a draw. At this point of the podcast, I'd normally bid farewell to our regular listeners, but we're going to go straight into the bonus Q&A. There's no point acting out the normal end of the show. We'll move on to a question from Mod Naya, who says, what's your opinion on the Cavani decision? And brings up the fact that Bernardo Silva did the same thing. He got a one-match ban. Dele Alli also got a one-match ban. And a couple of other incidents. It's a really difficult one with Cavani because there is a big part of me that, there's a big part of me that sympathises with Cavani. And first of all, he basically didn't do anything wrong because of the context. It wasn't as if he was talking English and brought out that word. In that context, he was speaking in Spanish to a friend, and it's an affectionate term. Certainly from his point of view. And so I sympathize with that. And I think there's a real problem of not using this as a chance to implement an education program and say, well, we understand the complexities of the difference in language and the difference in culture, but nevertheless, we're going to implement this training program and this education program and use this Cavani incident as the kind of the trigger. On the other hand, I almost understand and support the kind of mandatory, sentencing or judgment towards racist incidents because you can't kick it out, to use their expression, just with morals. The policy has to follow. And we've seen that all throughout the world and throughout history. So I do understand why this is there. I also think it's incredibly unfair on Cavani.
It's a tough one because I do feel for Cavani because having sort of read up on what this really means and sort of the context in which it was being said, this clearly wasn't something designed to be offensive. It was Cavani trying to sort of show some sort of affection for the person he was talking to on his Instagram. Having said that, I think you can understand why the Premier League wants to be seen to be, oh, sorry, not the Premier League, the FA wants to be seen to be taking sort of a hard stance on this because, you know, with everything, the optics of players still taking a knee before every game and condemning so quickly and so rightly sort of fans at Millwall and a few other stadiums that have booed players taking the knee before the games in support of Black Lives Matter. I think it's difficult from an optics perspective to have that going on and you be a vocal supporter of that and then let something like this slide without sort of doing anything. I do agree that I think there was a middle ground available here between a 3-game ban and nothing, whether that is sort of an education program or a smaller ban or a more sort of public statement of understanding the context in which this was said, whatever that might be. I think there was a middle ground available here.
Yeah.
Personally, I think if we see the FA and the Premier League implementing this harsh level of punishment on all future cases like this, I personally am not too worried about it. Like, again, I understand from their point of view why they need to be seen to be clamping down on this. And I think, although I think Mod, you know, Mod is right to point out previous smaller bans that other players have had.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I think the situation has...
It's the inconsistency. Sorry to interrupt. It's the inconsistencies of the past. The fact that Wayne Hennessy could do a Nazi salute and claim that he didn't know who Adolf Hitler was, or claim that he didn't realise what he was doing. The fact that Bernardo Silva got a 1-game ban for this, and that's not to say that Bernardo Silva necessarily deserved a 1-game ban. That's a different case and I'd have to look more into that. But the inconsistencies of the past are inconsistent and they're frustrating, but this is a new FA decision, one that was taken before the Cavani incident happened, was a decision to say the 3-game ban will be a minimum for these aggravated offences.
Yeah.
The judgment of that is obviously a little flawed. And I think it's typical of the FA's kind of cultural superiority complex and failure to understand other cultures. But I am pleased that Cavani has basically said, I'm disappointed to be banned, but I understand. And while I oppose the judgment, I accept the suspension, because you kind of want your player to accept that as the start of a better sport and a better way of dealing with it. And I think that was the right way for him and for the club to deal with it.
Yeah, I think you also can't underestimate the impact of the events of this summer with the George Floyd protests and the Black Lives Matter movement sort of really gaining steam and the issues of sort of racial equity becoming, in my opinion, more ingrained in sort of general society in the Western world, maybe at any point in my lifetime, sort of in the last 20 years or so. And so this is what I was going to say, in that although I think Mod is right to bring up previous bans that other players have had, I do also think that we've gone through something of a paradigm shift in the last few months. And that this is a completely new period with almost a blank slate in terms of the punishments the players will get for this. And so I think, you know, if in the next couple of years and we see more incidents like this, which I'm sure we will, and other players get the same, if not harsher bans, I personally am not so worried about it. If this is just the new standard that they've gone to and sort of this is the baseline, and if, say, Dele Alli did what he did and also got a 3 or a 4 or 5 match ban, then I'm okay with it. I think it remains to be seen consistently the FA will apply that. But I think it's difficult to compare to previous bans that happened before this summer, because I just think the situation has changed so drastically.
Yeah, agreed. Right, let's move on to some other questions. We've got another one from Mod, actually. Mod Nair says, Amad Diallo coming in this January with only a few top-level games record. Facundo Pellistri is still in the under-23s. Should we have high hopes for them to be like Nani or Cristiano Ronaldo, or are they going to be like Zoran Tosic or Rodrigo Possebon? The club has done a huge amount of research into these two players and has bought them in order to buy them before Brexit changes. Well, it has now changed, but they did it before Brexit to ensure that these players would be able to be signed and get work permits and be able to come into the club before the new regulations come in, which make it much harder to do so. Pellistri is a player who United heard about through their scouts, but also had people in Uruguay and South America who could talk about his mentality and his attitude, and that's a really important thing for Solskjaer. Amad Diallo is, again, another player who's been scouted a huge amount since. I mean, I remember seeing a link to him in December 2019, which is pretty recent, but there clearly has been interest for quite a long time. And that gives me some confidence. And these are players who are going to come in, and Palustri is settling into the under-23s. It's a huge move to come from Uruguay at the age of 18 and into Manchester and learn a new language. And he's doing well. He's being welcomed well. And he's really kind of trained with intensity with the under-23s, which I think has impressed the coaches, but also his teammates as well, who appreciate the fact that he's not seeing it just as a stepping stone to the first team, but he's given his all for it. Amad Diallo will come in at some point in January. It looks like that the paperwork should be done soon, which should allow him to. I would guess it would take him 3 or 4 weeks at minimum to be considered for the first team, if he is going to be considered for the first team, which is what there are some suggestions of. But either way, that they are two really exciting forwards who play with flair and quality. And it's United's job to try and kind of allow them to be as good as they can be. But I'm genuinely excited about them. I'm not predicting Tosic or Possibon.
I mean, I like the comparisons from Mod to Tosic and Possibon. I think at this point, predicting young players is just such a tricky business, because so many things have to happen between now and the point where they would potentially become like Nani, or, I mean, Ronaldo is probably not going to happen, but, you know, that sort of level of footballer, that is so difficult to predict. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I've seen loads of both of them. I've seen Palustri in the under-23s and I've been very impressed, but obviously that is a step down in terms of level, but I've been impressed with how well he sort of thrown himself into his work. And as Harry said, coming in to a place, you know, halfway around the world at 18 is certainly not an easy feat to do. I think Diallo, having done some research on Diallo and seeing what people have said, the people around Diallo are quite bullish on his talent, which I know is not unusual with young players, but I think the way that people, especially at Atalanta, have spoke about Diallo is quite different from what you see from most young players. I mean, Atalanta's captain Gomez has said that in training he's like Messi, which again is I'm sure a friend sort of trying to sort of pad up how good he is. But at the same time, especially for someone who has played with Messi in the national team, you don't get those kind of comments out of nowhere. And whether they pan out is a different story. You know, we've seen so many young players come over and come through the academy or come from elsewhere that have looked like amazing talents and just haven't panned out. But I think Diallo in particular is one that I am really excited to see. It, you know, you just don't see teams spend £25 million on 18-year-olds very often. And so at the very least, you know, United have seen something that they are very interested in. And to be honest, I probably trust our scouting network now more than I ever have at any point since Ferguson retired. So I am really excited to see Diallo play. I doubt he'll get a game before February, I would guess. But I think especially if we can get him into sort of the fourth or fifth round of the FA Cup, as long as we get there, I think it could be really exciting to see him play some games this year.
Yeah, and United obviously have a weakness on the right, as we've spoken about, and having some more offensive depth in there is going to be brilliant. And yeah, I'm excited about seeing him play. We will obviously have to be patient, and it will probably be next season where we really start to get some glimpses of his talent. But I am all for United signing players like this. All for it. We've got a couple more questions. We'll start with one from Michael Byers, who says, with two world-class players in Press and Heath, is there an argument that the women's team is actually better than the men's team now? It's a very hard comparison to make, because obviously the context is very different. I'd say that the rate of progress in the women's team has been incredibly impressive, but it's easier to make that progress. If Casey Stoney's side can be still challenging for the title in April, then that progress from being a good WSL team to title challenges is incredible and a remarkable achievement. But I think it's kind of an impossible comparison to make. I guess you could try and compare the relative quality of each position, but I think it's probably too difficult to do.
Yeah, yeah. The comparison is obviously very difficult, but I think there is an argument to be said that the women's team has been more successful than the men's team in the last couple of years in terms of, not even in terms of trophies, but just progress that's been made. And you're right that it is slightly easier in the women's game in that I think United have more of a comparative advantage compared to most other clubs in the WSL. But at the same time, once, you know, we'd established ourselves in the WSL last season and finished as sort of a good WSL team, the competition at the top is still very hot, you know, with Arsenal, Man City, Chelsea in particular, three very, very good sides, and Tottenham as well have obviously gone out and signed Alex Morgan. And, you know, the competition at the top of the WSL is very, very tough. And so I think, yes, it was slightly easier for United's women's team to get to the point of being sort of a top four or five WSL team. And so maybe we should have expected them to get there a lot quicker than the men's team have improved. But getting to the point where they are now, they're still unbeaten, I'm pretty sure, after, 15 games of the season, which is an unbelievable feat, you know, an achievement that is just crazy to think about from you know, a team that was only founded 3 years ago. So I think there is an argument to be said that the progress the women's team has made in the last 3 years is more significant, even given the relative difficulty of that progress for the women's team than the men's team.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably fair. But I think, yeah, the comparison is a very difficult one to make. Let's go on to Ted's questions. Ted Popham has sent in a few. He says, following your conversation last week about squad players bringing competition, what do you think of De Gea's season so far? I feel like he's back to the safe pair of hands we are used to and proved it against Villa. I think he is playing very well. Or he's playing at the level we expect of him. I'm not sure he's playing anything above that, but he is in kind of a consistent form at the moment, and that is a real positive.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's at the level he was in the sort of Mourinho and Van Gaal era, but he's not making any big mistakes. I think he's at least not giving us a reason to turn to Dean Henderson.
Exactly, yeah.
Which I think is really all he wanted from this season. And to be fair, I think part of the reason why he's not at the heights he was in the Van Gaal and Mourinho areas is also because he doesn't need to be. We're a much better team defensively now than we were in that period.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need him to drag us through games, but he's doing what I think we expect him to.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Ted's got a couple of other questions, so we'll go on to them as well. He asked about Sergio Romero and your thoughts on how the club has treated him. Says he'd really love to see him get a move away in some proper first team football. Yeah, I mean, I agree. United just should have let him go. On the other hand, the club have no obligation to let him go for nothing. So I understand why they weren't willing to just palm him off to another team, because he is a good goalkeeper and he would improve some of United's competitors. So there's no obligation to let him go. And he signed the contract to United. So there are two sides to the story, but yes, I would like to see him sold to somewhere and for him to have a chance of being a first team goalkeeper somewhere. He's still got plenty of time left in his career to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's been a brilliant player for United and has been seriously, seriously important for us in you know, winning the FA Cup a few years ago and carrying us through some really good cup runs throughout his career at United. I saw some links in the last couple of days with him for the move to Brighton. Obviously just recently benched Matty Ryan and are playing a young goalkeeper in Sanchez at the moment, that they wanted to bring Romero in, I think on loan until the end of the season for now, which I think would actually be a great move for all parties. You know, he gets to stay in England where his family's settled. He's not going to a direct rival, so United shouldn't have any problem letting him go. And he'd probably start every week. And because, I mean, he's not a world-class goalkeeper, but he's a very good keeper that would improve, I would say, about half of Premier League sides.
Yeah. I mean, there's always this weird thing with Romero, because we haven't seen him have that prolonged spell in a first team, which means you can comfortably say there aren't going to be any mistakes.
Yeah.
He's come in for particular games and done brilliantly and kept so many clean sheets for United in the Cup, in the Europa League, whatever. But
against weaker competition as well.
Yeah, and I guess you just cannot make that judgment without seeing him over a 30-game season. So I guess there is that, but I would imagine that clubs will have considered that when they go in from him. Plenty of clubs have been interested in him. So Brighton would make sense. And on the subject of Brighton, Ted also asked about Tariq Lamptey, maybe a deal for him to have some competition at right back. It's an interesting one because there's a debate here. Do you go for an experienced right back who can help Wan-Bissaka improve, but also provide some competition kind of along the Telles line? Or do you go for another very good young right back like Tariq Lamptey of Brighton, but also Max Ahrens of Norwich, who's been linked recently? So there is certainly a debate there. I'm not sure which side I fall down. I think probably if you can get a good experienced right back who's under 30 for free or for less than 20 million, then maybe you go for that. But if there is an opportunity to sign Lamptey or Ahrens for under 30 million, then you probably go for that.
No, I mean, I really like Lamptey. I think he's had a really good season at Brighton.
Yeah, same.
And I think it makes sense as a signing, I think, to bring in... We talked about this, I don't know if it was the last episode or the one before, that we've benefited from having those two different options in Telles and Shaw at left-back, and that right-back is probably the one area of our squad where we're still lacking for depth. And, you know, if Wan-Bissaka gets injured, it's then down to putting either Brandon Williams there, who for whatever reason seems to have fallen out of favour to some degree, or putting one of the centre-backs out there. So I think it does make sense. Like you said, there's been some links to Max Ahrens recently, which also makes sense. I think, to be honest, either of them would provide us with a different option and would be refreshing to have a right-back who is, you know, a little bit more attacking, and that is sort of their natural game. And because I think the one thing that you sort of miss with Wan-Bissaka, when he plays in a conventional four, kind of the inverse of what we mentioned with Telles, when he plays in a conventional four, he's very, very good. You know, because defensively, he's so good that some of his weaknesses going forward don't really matter so much. I think sometimes when he plays as a right wing back in a five and we're reliant on him as our only attacking outlet on the right, sometimes it can be a bit of an issue. And that's maybe where someone like Lamptey or Ahrens could come in. At this point, I think, honestly, any added depth to our squad is a positive, especially in a position where we need it. So I think if we can get Lamptey or Ahrens on sort of a decent enough deal, I think we should go ahead and do it, because it would offer us another option. They're both very good young players that would compete with Wan-Bissaka and just give us another option, which, especially in a team that's kind of on the up and up, in a young team, I think is perfect. It's exactly what we need. It's just some more competition.
Yeah. That being said, I don't expect any kind of deal along those lines in January.
No, definitely not January.
Because I mean, you think about Brighton, who are trying to stay in the league.
I mean, a Lamptey-Romero swap deal, maybe?
yeah, potentially. I mean, that is one possibility where you say to Brighton, you can have Romero, but only if we get Lamptey now. Or you say, you can have Romero, but we want first dibs on Lamptey in the summer.
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't happen in January.
No. But then, I mean, you look at Max Ahrens at Norwich as well, and Norwich are trying to get promoted again. So I can't see them letting him leave now. So I don't expect much to happen in the January transfer window. Obviously, Diallo is joining. That is a boost. Pelistri will start to become part of the first team squads, I would expect. I expect some loans to be done, but mainly going out, and maybe someone like Dylan Levitt, who's not had a great time at Charlton, to come back, and they will be reviewing those loans. But in terms of the first team, I can't see a huge amount changing.
Yeah, I doubt it as well. I don't really think we have a massive reason to either. The only thing that I could see us maybe doing would be like a right back to that is competition, and right wing. I really, at this point, I think the only glaring holes that you would want to fix now, but I don't think there is any real reason for us to rush into anything in the January transfer window.
Yeah.
I would be very, very surprised if we sign any first team players.
Yeah. And it's just nice to have depth. I mean, Tony van der Beek is sitting on the bench and not playing. I mean, which is strange.
I thought he should have come on against Wolves, to be fair. I think he would have been perfect actually for that game.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. So there is that depth there. And I think Diallo coming in and Greenwood, if he can find some form, but also Pelistri as well, and Dan James, who has found some form again, hopefully makes that right wing a little stronger. But we need a starter on that right wing, and it will probably have to wait until the summer. But you can see how different we are when Rashford plays on the right and gives some actual quality. And it makes our left side better as well. It gives more space to Shaw and to Pogba or whoever else is on there. So that is certainly a big priority in the summer. Patrons, thank you for supporting the podcast as always. Happy New Year. Thank you for letting us do this every week. Non-patrons, normal listeners, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the the extra Q&A at the end of the show. If you're interested in hearing that every week, it is normally 15, 20 minutes, and we always get some really interesting questions from people like Ted, Michael, Mod, Craig, many, many others. If you're interested in that, you can pay, it's as little as £1.50 a month. You just have to go to our Twitter at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there to find out information. You'll find a link there. Or you can go to Patreon. That's patreon.com/manUTD Weekly Pod. So that's where to go if you're interested. Thank you for listening. For more from us throughout the week, you can find Jack on Twitter at
@UTDTait, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64. And as I say, the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. Happy New Year. Thank you for listening. And a happy, happy time for Manchester United. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.